Already inside the temple, our people could not possibly find them. Nor would they risk a frontal assault on a temple full of paladins, even if they knew for sure they were inside,
Zed said quietly, as the ferryman finally reached their bank.
The ferryman looked half scared to death as he encouraged them to quickly board his small craft. He never once made eye contact with either Zed or Cole, but instead constantly scanned the trees beyond for any signs of movement. The moment both men were on board, he pushed off from the riverbank, putting as much distance between them and the forest side of the river as quickly as he could. Once they had reached the center of the river, the ferryman slowed the craft and visibly relaxed again.
"How come two fine gents such as yourselves end up stuck on that side of the river after dark anyway?"
asked the ferryman, trying to make conversation.
"I'd say that's none of your business, unless you think otherwise,"
Zed growled at the man.
"Sorry, sir, I meant no harm. Please forgive me,"
replied the ferryman, averting his eyes from Zed's and bowing his head in subservience. Zed failed to reply, and the remainder of the crossing was done in complete silence. When they reached the Stelgad side of the riverbank, they disembarked the small craft without a word or payment of any kind. There were no complaints from the ferryman. Zed could see six men guarding the east gate and two town guards. No doubt the guards had been magically charmed not to take any notice of his fellow agents, possibly even to be on the lookout for the boy themselves. None of that, however, concerned Zed. He knew the boy and the paladin would never likely pass that gate anyway. If there was a secret entrance into the temple from outside the city walls, he needed to find it, and fast. But circumnavigating the outside of the city walls whilst checking for hidden entrances on foot would take him hours, time he didn't have. He noticed another two agents on horseback further north on the road at a junction and started walking towards them, Cole following closely behind. When Zed got close enough to see them more clearly, he smiled to himself. He outranked both of them. Both of the men on horseback watched him and Cole approach their position, and both snapped to attention when they noticed his small silver skull pendant hanging below his sigil of Aemon.
"I require both of your horses for urgent Empire business," Zed stated, leaving no room for debate.
The two men were obviously not happy, but neither dared deny Zed's request and surrendered their mounts without complaint. Everyone's rank within the Empire was dictated by the amount of magical power they possessed, and any subordinate-ranked agent who refused to follow the order of his or her superior often found themselves dead without trial. Zed and Cole mounted their new horses and returned to the east gate without so much as a thank you to the two men they left standing on the road behind them. When they reached the east gate, instead of entering the city, Zed continued riding south, following the city wall. They followed the wall until it turned to the west and then continued following it in that direction. 10 minutes later came the first requests for help from within the city. The boy had been spotted, but he was now with two girls instead of the paladin. Cole wheeled his horse around, ready to race back to the east gate. But even before he was fully turned, he was ordered to stay where he was.
"We must return to the city, sire. They found the boy and are requesting the help of everyone,"
Cole said desperately.
"I know, I'm not deaf. We aren't going back to the city," Zed stated.
"Why not?"
"The boy didn't enter the city through a gate, so it stands to reason he won't leave through one either. I think he found a way into the temple from outside the city walls. All we need to do is either find the secret entrance or wait until he reveals himself outside the city walls and kill him. Follow me,"
Zed said, and continued following the southern city wall. Cole turned his horse back around and followed without complaint. From the communications within the city, Zed knew that there were now at least six agents in pursuit of the boy, but they were so far unable to penetrate his shield. He didn't understand how an untrained mage was able to even generate a shield, let alone one capable of withstanding the attacks from six trained magi. He also heard one report that said the boy was shielding not only himself, but the two girls now with him. He dismissed this report as highly improbable, as not even a fully trained mage would be able to extend their shield so far and hold out against what was now at least eight agents attacking him. Zed became increasingly more concerned that the boy would be killed within the city by his pursuers, and his plans to return to the Empire and his family would be in ruins any moment. But only seconds later, he once again had renewed optimism as reports of a dozen paladins joining the battle filtered out of the city. Several Empire agents had been killed by the paladins already, and now they stood between his countrymen and the boy, shielding him and retreating towards the very temple Zed had suspected of having a secret entrance leading out beyond the city walls.
What was reported next shocked Zed deeply, and also many of the agents within the city too, if their reactions were anything to go by. Two of the paladins had been badly injured, and their defensive shield line was vulnerable to attack. But instead of being able to easily pick off the paladins through the opening, the boy had managed to shield them all from a distance far greater than should have been possible. Not only that, he managed to halt his shield against over a dozen agents' concentrated attacks. Surely the reports were inaccurate. Maybe the paladins' blessed shields had absorbed much more of the force than they thought. Shortly afterwards, the reports came in that the paladins had made it safely back to their temple. Several of the agents pounded the temple doors and walls with their magic, but were soon ordered to cease fire.
"Why have they stopped attacking the temple?"
Cole asked, confused. Zed rolled his eyes, staggered at the lack of knowledge of the imbecile standing beside him.
"Because the temple is blessed by Aisha, same as the paladin's weapons and shields. None of our magic will have any effect on it. The doors could only be opened with battering rams, and we have neither the rams nor the men for an all-out assault on a temple full of paladins," Zed replied.
"So the Empire will just let the boy escape?"
Cole asked, shocked.
"No. I expect they will now begin a round-the-clock surveillance of the temple until the boy attempts to leave it again. But if I'm right, they will be wasting their time. Come on, let's find this secret entrance. Then maybe we can both return back to the Empire heroes yet,"
Zed replied, resuming his course along the southern wall.
"So, any ideas where to start looking for it?"
"Well, if I were digging a secret tunnel out of the city, I'd want it as short as possible. So I'm guessing it would emerge somewhere outside the city's west wall, not too far from where the temple is located," Zed replied.
Chapter 27.
"Herschel, I must leave now. I'm sure Ren will be there waiting for me by now," Lusam said.
"Who's Ren?"
asked Neela, confused. Lusam had completely forgotten that Neela knew nothing about Ren or the promise he had made him in exchange for his help in rescuing Neela. He needed to explain everything to her, but he didn't want to do it in front of Herschel's men. The fewer who knew his plans, the better.
"Herschel, is there somewhere quiet I can speak with Neela, please?" he asked.
"Of course. If you go through that door and turn right, you will find a small prayer room on the left,"
Herschel replied, pointing at a door on the far wall.
"Thank you. We won't be long,"
Lusam replied, heading towards the door Herschel had indicated. It wasn't until they were through the door that Lusam realized Alexia had also joined them.
"Oh, I'm sorry, Alexia, but may I have a private word with Neela, please?"
"Sure, no problem,"
Alexia replied.
"It's okay, Lusam. Whatever you need to say, you can say in front of Alexia. She's like a sister to me, and I trust her completely,"
Neela said.
"Okay. Well, I don't really know where to start, so I guess I'll start from the time you were abducted in Helveel," Lusam said.
He began to recount his story of how the man in the black robes had finally caught up to him and attacked him with magic, and how Ren had appeared around the corner just at the wrong moment, only to be blasted by his magic. He told her who Ren was, and why he had been sent to find him, and ultimately take him to the High Temple in Lemuria to complete his training. He explained the promise he'd freely made to return with him to Lemuria in exchange for his help in rescuing Neela, how they had travelled through the forest battling netherworld creatures and coming face to face with Aisha herself. When he finally finished recounting his story, he waited a moment before continuing.
"There's much more I need to tell you, but I'm very short of time right now. Ren will be waiting for me on the other side of the wall with the horses. I must hurry before he's discovered by any Empire agents,"
Lusam said.
"What do you mean waiting for you? Surely you mean waiting for us? You better not be thinking of leaving me here,"
Neela exclaimed.
"Neela, I can't ask you to risk your life for a promise I made to Ren. You just witnessed for yourself how dangerous those men outside are, and who knows how many of them are out there waiting. You only had to make that promise to Ren because of me. So if you think I'm going to let you face whatever's out there alone after you risked your life to save me, then you're crazy. I'm coming with you. Let's go,"
Neela said with absolute conviction.
"Neela, I'm not sure I can protect you against all the Empire agents that are trying to kill me. We only just made it to the safety of this temple with our lives last time. In fact, if it hadn't been for the paladins helping us, I'm not sure we would have made it at all. I was planning to ask Herschel if he would allow you to travel to Lemuria with the next group of paladins he sent. That way you would be safe, and we could both reunite there,"
Lusam said. Deep down, Neela knew Lusam was only trying to protect her, but she also knew that she loved him and that she never wanted to be separated from him again, and certainly not under these type of circumstances where she wouldn't know from day to day whether he was still alive or not. She'd had enough of that kind of mental torture already on her long journey to Stelgat with Skelly, and had no intentions of ever repeating it if she could avoid it.
Lusam, I understand the risks, but it's my life to risk, and whatever you say won't make me change my mind. If I did die, then I'll die happy, knowing I was able to spend my last days with you. I love you, and I'm coming with you. It's that simple, Neela whispered.
Lusam hugged her tightly, gently kissing her lips, and then whispered,
I love you too.
Ew, did you really have to drag me in here to watch you both slobbering over each other like that? I think I'd rather have stayed in my cell back at the Hawk's Guild House than watch you two much longer,
Alexia said mockingly. Neela and Lusam had both momentarily forgotten all about Alexia being in the same room and were slightly startled by her playful interruption of their blossoming passion for each other. Lusam felt his cheeks redden, but Neela dealt with her own embarrassment in her usual manner by playfully punching Alexia on the arm.
If you miss it so much, I'm sure we can arrange to drop you back at your old cell on our way out of town,
Neela said, grinning at her old friend.
Yes, I bet you'd like that, but then you'd miss all my witty banter on our journey to Lemuria,
Alexia said, holding up her hand towards Lusam.
And before you give me the same speech about all the dangers, lover boy, I've already heard it. Neela is the only family I have left, and unless she asks me to stay here, I'm coming too. You know, Lusam, as much as I hate to admit it, she's the best shot I've ever seen with a bow, and she might actually be useful to us, if we can put up with her annoying personality, that is,
Neela said, winking at Lusam, who just rolled his eyes at their verbal jousting.
Good, that's settled then. I'm coming with you both to Lemuria. Talking of bows, I don't suppose your friend Herschel has a spare one, does he? I lost mine when I was captured by Shiva's men.
I guess I can ask him before we leave. By the way, we're not going directly to Lemuria because the road south will be crawling with Empire agents. We plan to ride west to the Forest of Danar and then head north to Helveel. Apparently Ren knows the harbour master at a small seaport just east of Helveel. We plan to book passage aboard a suitable vessel, then travel south to Lemuria via sea, Lusam said. Neela and Alexia both nodded their agreement without adding anything further. I guess we better get going then. If we're lucky, we might make the forest before sunrise and avoid any further unwanted attention from the Empire, Lusam said. Neela and Alexia both agreed, and they all headed back to the main room. When they reached the main room, they found Herschel patiently waiting for them to return. He'd already dismissed his men back to their regular duties within the temple, leaving the room feeling strangely quiet.
Herschel, before we all leave, I need to ask something of you, Lusam said.
All you say? I expected the young ladies would be staying within the safety of the temple for a while. I have arranged for them to have their own private chambers in the west wing, well away from the men, Herschel said.
That won't be necessary, but thanks for the kind offer. We appreciate it. It's regarding the fact that they'll be joining me as to why I need to ask you for something. Alexia apparently favours the use of a bow, and I was hoping that you might have a spare one we could take with us.
I'm sure we can find something for you in the armoury. Bows aren't the weapon of choice for a paladin, but we do have a couple we use for hunting game in the forest. You're welcome to take one of those with you. Please, wait here a moment, and I'll go get one for you, Herschel said,
and he quickly disappeared through a door at the opposite end of the room. Moments later, he returned with a standard-looking bow and a quiver of arrows. Alexia thanked him for the weapon and began to strap the quiver of arrows to her back and then placed the bow across her shoulder.
Thanks for all your help, Herschel. I hope we meet again in the future, but for now I'm afraid we must be going. Ren will probably be wondering where we are by now, Lusam said.
I'm sure we'll see each other again, but in the meantime, stay safe, and may Isha watch over you all, as I know she will.
Thanks, Herschel. I hope we haven't put you or your men in danger by coming here. There are a lot of Empire agents outside these walls right now, Lusam said.
Herschel laughed and patted Lusam on the shoulder.
And outside these walls they shall stay, boy. No magic of theirs could ever breach these blessed walls, and they know it. Not to mention the fact that they probably think we have at least 200 paladins in here. No, they won't dare attack us here. We're quite safe, so don't you worry about us, Herschel said.
I'm happy to hear that. Then I guess it's time we were off. Thanks again for everything, Herschel, Lusam said, shaking his hand.
Neela and Alexia both bid him farewell, and then all three made their way to the tower room. Once they entered the tower room, the large doors were once again closed and barred from within the temple, plunging them all into darkness. Lusam created a small light orb and began climbing the stone staircase.
"Why are we in here?" Neela asked. "I was about to ask the same thing," said Alexia.
"Sorry, I keep forgetting you don't know everything. This is where Ren and I first entered the temple. We crossed from the top of the city wall and then came in through the top windows of this tower. We need to go out the same way, so hopefully we aren't seen leaving the temple. Ren should already be waiting for us on the other side of the wall, with a bit of luck," Lusam said.
"So I guess now isn't a good time to tell you that I'm afraid of heights,"
Neela said, looking up into the darkness above.
"Don't worry, I'll hold your hand at the top before we jump off the tower onto the wall,"
Lusam said, struggling to hide his smile.
"Careful, lover boy, or she's likely to throw you off the top of this tower herself,"
Alexia said. Neela didn't respond to either of their jokes. Instead, she continued looking anxiously up into the darkness above. Lusam began to climb the stairs again, closely followed by Alexia and a very reluctant Neela. Lusam hadn't realized just how many floors he and Ren had fallen past when they had first arrived. He knew climbing the stairs would be much harder than descending them, but he had no idea how much harder. After 15 minutes, everyone was sweating and breathless, and they still had several floors left to climb. When they finally reached the top of the stone stairs, Lusam looked for another ladder to reach the top platform, but found none. He knew before he even spoke what Neela's reaction would likely be, but he had no choice.
"I need to levitate us all up to the next platform. The wooden ladder broke when we first arrived, so there's no other way to get up there, I'm afraid,"
Lusam said. Neela by this time was hugging the wall like her life depended on it, and Alexia didn't seem too happy about the news either.
"Trust me, it'll be fine. Each of you take my hand, and on the count of three, we'll step off this platform."
"We'll do what?"
Alexia exclaimed. Neela just made a nervous giggling sound and remained stuck to the wall.
"Like this,"
Lusam said, stepping off the edge and falling about a foot before he stabilized himself in midair, then floated back up to their platform.
"It's okay, I won't let you fall, I promise," he said, offering them both his hands.
Alexia looked nervous, but nothing like as nervous as Neela, who was now physically shaking at the thought of stepping off the platform into midair. Lusam gave her trembling hand a squeeze of encouragement, but he didn't think she even noticed.
"Okay, after three, we all step off together. 1, 2, 3,
Lusam said, and stepped off the platform, almost dragging the two girls with him. He heard Alexia's sharp intake of breath as they left the platform, but Neela squealed like a stuck pig as she left the safety of the platform. He felt sure her legs would have given way under her if she were having to support herself at that moment. He quickly levitated all three of them up onto the top platform, gently releasing Neela so her legs had a chance to support her weight. He gave her a hug to try and calm her nerves, but he could feel her still trembling in his arms.
"Neela, look at me, please," he said.
Neela opened her eyes and looked at him, still holding tightly onto him as if she was too scared to let go.
"I'm sorry we have to do this. I had no idea how scared you would be, but I need you to trust me. Can you do that?"
Lusam asked. Neela nodded silently.
"Good. We need to levitate from this window across the gap and onto the city wall over there,"
Lusam said, pointing out of the window. Neela slowly turned her head to look. She closed her eyes again and swallowed hard when she saw the gap between the window and the wall, but she nodded her head nonetheless.
"I know it'll be hard, but I need you to stay completely silent as we cross the gap. We don't want anyone looking up to see us, especially any Empire agents. Do you understand?"
Lusam said. Again, Neela nodded her understanding.
"I'll take us across the gap as fast as I can, but we must stop once we reach the top of the wall. Once we land safely on the wall, we should all lie down flat on our stomachs until I check over the wall for dangers. If Ren is already there waiting, we'll quickly levitate down to him. Do you both understand?"
Lusam said. Both girls nodded, and they all prepared to leave through the open window. Lusam checked below for signs of people passing by, especially the distinctive auras of the Empire agents, but thankfully saw none. He held both Neela's and Alexia's hands tightly as they all approached the open window. After one last check of the streets below, he stepped out into the night sky, taking Neela and Alexia with him. He heard their sharp intake of breath as they fell from the height of the tower towards the top of the wall below. A moment later, they were all safely on top of the wide city wall. They all immediately fell flat to their stomachs, and Lusam checked the far side of the wall for any hidden dangers. He couldn't see any Empire agents on the other side of the wall, but he was very happy to see Ren directly below with two horses at the ready.
"Okay, let's go,"
he said, standing up and offering them both a hand each. As they all stepped off the wall and began to descend, Lusam suddenly noticed a bright crimson aura far off to the south. He wasn't sure, but he thought he may have seen a second one too, just before they vanished from sight behind a hill as they all descended. The horses startled a little as all three of them touched down gently on the ground next to Ren.
"About time. I was beginning to think something bad had happened to you, lad,"
Ren said, holding both horses steady while they settled back down.
"We did have some complications on the way,"
Lusam said, not elaborating any further.
"This is Neela and her friend Alexia. This is Ren, the one I told you about."
"It's good to meet you at last, Neela. You too, Alexia. Although I'm afraid I haven't heard mention of you before today,"
Ren said, looking at Lusam for an explanation.
"It's a long story, but now probably isn't the best time for it. I think I just spotted a couple of Empire agents coming this way from the south. One of them looked pretty powerful from what I could see,"
Lusam said.
"Well, if you're right, I hope they were both on foot, because these two horses won't last long with two people on each if we have to try and outrun anyone,"
Ren said.
"Understood. Ren, you take Alexia, I'll ride with Neela,"
Lusam said, taking the reins of the second horse.
"Neela, you ride up front. You have far more experience with horses than I do."
"No problem,"
Neela replied, and quickly mounted the horse. Knowing he would likely make a fool of himself trying to climb up onto the horse, Lusam decided to just levitate himself up onto the horse instead, and got a look of disdain for his efforts from Neela.
"What?"
Lusam asked innocently. Neela just shook her head and replied,
"Nothing."
Chapter 28.
"There. Do you see that?"
Zed said, pointing at something in the distance.
"See what?"
Cole replied. Then he spotted it. It looked like the auras of two people slowly falling from the city wall. Zed stopped his horse in its tracks.
"Cole, can you levitate?"
asked Zed, knowing the answer even before Cole gave it.
"No, I can't. I once tried it and broke my ankle." "Of course you can't, and neither can they,"
Zed said, nodding towards where they had just seen the two people's auras slowly falling from the city wall.
"You don't have enough magical ability to levitate, but you have more than either of those two did. So, how can two people who possess no magic ability levitate themselves from the top of the city wall to the ground below?"
"They can't,"
Cole replied.
"Exactly. So there had to be a third person with them, a person of strong magical ability, one that we couldn't see. The boy,"
Zed said, almost to himself.
"But we can always see magic users. They stand out like a full moon on a midwinter night."
"Usually I would agree with you. But there has to be something special about that boy. Something that's kept him alive all this time. And I think I've just discovered what that is. He can hide his aura," Zed said.
"Impossible," Cole exclaimed. "Nobody can hide their aura. Not even Lord Zelroth can do that."
"If you have a better explanation for what you just witnessed, and the fact that the boy managed to walk around in Helvile for years without being discovered, then please enlighten me,"
Zed said, but he was only met with silence from Cole.
"I didn't think so."
"So, are we to capture or kill them, sire?"
Cole asked.
"Neither yet," Zed replied.
"But I thought you wanted the credit for the boy. If we let them go, they would be someone else's prize,"
Cole said.
"Not necessarily. The boy was smart enough not to travel to Stelgad by road, and also smart enough to enter and leave the city over the wall instead of through a gate. I can't imagine for one moment he would be stupid enough to try and travel south to Lemuria on the road. No, he has a plan to avoid our forces, and I will allow him to do so. For now. If we attacked him here, there could always be the chance of someone superior to myself claiming the credit for his capture or death. But if we wait until he's far enough away from our forces, so that they won't detect our fight, then no one can steal our prize away from us,"
said Zed, with an evil smile on his face. Ren led the two horses north towards the forest of Danar. He was aware it would soon be dawn, and that it would be much easier to enter the forest unseen if they arrived while it was still dark. He was also very much aware of the need to keep the horses as fresh as possible, just in case they were spotted by the enemy and had to run for their lives. Lusam felt very vulnerable without his magic shield protecting their group, but he had no intention of repeating the same mistake he'd made inside Stelgad. Leaving his shield active would alert every Empire agent around if they saw him. He had to keep reminding himself that if any agent saw his party right now, they still couldn't see his aura. Therefore, they shouldn't suspect him of being the one they were looking for, especially when they all thought he was still inside the Temple of Light. Lusam had been watching behind them for signs of the two agents that he'd spotted when leaving the city wall, but although he caught several glimpses of them, they didn't seem to be gaining on them at all. He began to relax a little, until they crested the next small hill and the southern road to Lemuria came into view. On the road, half a mile ahead of them, were four Empire agents, two with horses and two without.
"Ren, we may have a problem. There are four Empire agents up ahead of us on the road," Lusam said.
"Yes, I see them. Don't change direction completely, but let's angle our horse slightly, so by the time we pass them we will be a little further south of them," Ren said.
They both marginally changed the direction of their mounts, so they would intersect the road about a quarter of a mile further south than they would have, and continued at the same slow pace so as not to draw any unwanted attention to their group. When they were only a few hundred paces from the road, Lusam noticed the two agents on horseback break away from the other two and start heading in their direction.
"Do you see that, Ren?" Lusam asked.
"Yes, I do. Stay calm, everyone," Ren replied.
"That won't help us when they read Neela's or Alexia's mind. They'll know it's us they're after for sure," Lusam said.
I forgot about that," Ren replied.
"Not if I kill them first with my bow," Alexia said, reaching slowly for her bow. "No, we can't kill them either. Even if they didn't shield themselves in time, their deaths would be felt by every agent for miles around. We would be showing them all exactly where to find us," Lusam said. "So what are we going to do?" asked Neela. "I'm not sure. But maybe Ren's suggestion is the best for now. Neela, if you feel your mind is being probed, scratch your head so I know. Same goes for you, Alexia. Hopefully they'll only try reading mine or Ren's mind," Lusam said.
"I don't have enough time to teach you any mind disciplines, but if you feel their presence within your mind, try and think of the most terrifying thing you can think of. Fear clouds the mind, but only temporarily. After a minute or so, your mind will adapt to the fear and your thoughts will become clearer to read once more," Ren said quietly.
As Lusam's party crossed over the road and into the fields beyond, the two men on horseback came within range to try to read their minds. Lusam knew this because he was the first to feel that strange crawling sensation within his mind. Effortlessly, he shut away any thought that would give away his identity and allowed other information to be freely taken by the two men. If his plan worked, the two agents would now think he was a pig farmer from a village south of Stelgad on his way to buy livestock from the west. Lusam watched carefully for any signs that either Neela's or Alexia's minds were being probed, and at first he thought his ruse had worked. One of the men turned his horse around and headed back towards where he'd started from, happy that Lusam's party were not of any interest to them. However, the other agent remained long enough to probe Neela's mind. Lusam saw the signal from Neela and the fear in her face. They were about to be discovered. Lusam's mind raced, but all he could come up with was the same trick he had used before, projecting his aura to a different location. The problem was, out here there was nothing but open space. If he projected his aura here, it would be discovered as a fake almost instantly. The closest cover was either back where they had come from or a long way in front of them where the forest started. He knew he couldn't project it towards the forest, or he would be cutting off their own escape route. The small hill behind them was a very long way back now, and he wasn't sure he could project his aura anywhere near as far as that, but he had to at least try. Building up his power within his shuttered mind, he concentrated hard on the crest of the small hill they had climbed several minutes earlier, and released a huge blast of power at the location. Instantly, he knew he had overdone it. The area around the hill briefly glowed like a blazing fire, lighting up the whole area with the color of a powerful mage's aura. The man attempting to read Neela's mind snapped his head in the direction of the hill, turned his horse, and rode full speed towards the location where Lusam had projected his aura. When Lusam glanced back towards the road, he also saw the other three agents rushing towards the area he had chosen. "We need to get out of here fast," Lusam said. "A
As soon as they realize it was only a trick, they'll be coming after us, and they won't be alone.
I agree, but at least you bought us some time. Let's go, Ren said, spurring his horse into a gallop and Neela following his lead.
Less than 5 minutes later, they reached the edge of the forest, but they weren't alone. Moments after they had dismounted and Ren had released the horses, the first magical missile struck a nearby tree, narrowly missing Alexia.
Run!
Shouted Lusam, and all of them ran for cover within the forest, while several more magical missiles blasted apart trees all around them. Zed and Cole were approaching a small hill when they were almost blinded by a brief flash resembling a powerful mage's aura, but many times brighter. At first, Zed thought they had been discovered by the boys' party and were now under attack. But having erected his magical shield to the danger, he now realized they were still alone. Seconds later, he intercepted the communication of the boys' suspected location, and the description matched the very hill where they now stood.
Damn, Zed cursed. It looks like we'll be joining the battle after all. Let's go. We have to get to that boy first, before anyone else does.
Zed surged forward over the hill, almost colliding with another Empire agent coming in the opposite direction. Cole raced to follow, trying to answer the questions coming from the other agent as he went. Zed could see the boy's party clearly now, but the boy himself remained invisible to his mage sight. He raced across the fields in pursuit, and as soon as he was in range, he released several magical missiles towards the fleeing party. The blasts missed their intended targets, destroying several trees in the process. Then they were gone. When he reached the edge of the forest, he waited for Cole to catch up. Although he had considered going into the forest alone after them, having had time to think about the situation, he decided against it. The boy had already shown great power and skill, achieving things Zed thought impossible. Who knew how powerful he really was? Zed had no intentions of finding out the hard way, not when so many expendable volunteers now raced towards his location. He planned to take the first group that arrived under his command, then set out after the boys' party. It would be daylight soon, and much easier to track them.
Chapter 29
How do you know where we're going? Neela asked breathlessly during a brief respite from running.
I don't. I've never been in this forest before, but if we keep the moss on the trees to our backs, we should be heading north,
Lusam replied between breaths. He had hoped his forest running days were forever behind him, but at least this forest didn't contain the dark creatures the last one had. He hoped.
This forest is vast. It covers half of the western continent, and most of it is uncharted, especially the further west you travel,
Ren said.
I remember seeing some very old maps of this forest during my training at the High Temple, and if I remember correctly, there's a long mountain range that runs from north to south within the forest. It might be a good idea if we head west and try to get to the other side of that mountain range. If we were to continue directly north, we could easily be ambushed by any Empire forces that join the hunt for us. But if we put the mountain range between us and them, they will have far fewer opportunities to surprise us along the way.
Can't they simply come over the mountain and intercept us that way instead? Asked Alexia.
No, I don't think so, Ren replied. From what I remember reading about that mountain range, it's more like a giant wall or cliff than a regular mountain. There was a reference to an ancient trade route between two long-lost cities in the region, one on each side of the mountain range. The book spoke of having to pass the mountain range by either the north or south passage, as scaling it was impossible.
I've never heard of that place before, and I've lived in Stelgad all my life, Neela said.
Me neither. Agreed Alexia.
It's not that surprising, really. The Ilveen Mountains are considered by most to be our northwestern borders, but the truth is that beyond them lies much more land. The land beyond the Ilveen Mountains is mostly barren rock, cold and inhospitable. No crops would ever grow there now, and no people could survive for long there, but the history books tell us that it wasn't always that way. Once, our people thrived there, and trade passed freely from west to east around the Spine,
Ren said. The Spine? Lusam asked.
Yes, that's what they used to call the long, thin mountain range, the Spine of the Ilveen Mountains,
Ren replied.
Ah, okay,
Lusam said.
There's another reason why we should head west too, Neela said.
Why's that? Asked Ren.
Because if we remain on this soft ground, it'll be far too easy for them to track us,
Neela replied, pointing out their clear tracks on the ground.
If the terrain to the west is as rocky as you say, it would be far harder for them to track us there. We may even be able to lose them completely.
Good point, Ren replied. We'd better continue running. They can't be that far behind us, and it will be full daylight soon.
Okay, west it is then, said Lusam,
and he set off running in a westerly direction, with the others closely following behind him. It was mid-afternoon before they stopped again. The ground had become slightly more rocky, but they were still firmly inside the forest and easily trackable. Ren had managed to procure some basic travel rations for their journey, but he had been forced to leave some behind when they were attacked. His best guess was that they would last 2 or 3 days at best, especially now there were 4 mouths to feed. He handed out the travel rations, and they all ate in silence, each keeping an eye out for movement from the direction they had just come. It wasn't long before Alexia spotted something in the distance.
There they are,
she said quietly, pointing out the movement in the distance.
Time to go, Ren said,
just as an Empire agent spotted them and the shout went up. A tree less than 6 paces from Lusam exploded as a magical missile struck it, then another and another. They needed to put some distance between them, and fast. Lusam briefly turned and released several magical missiles of his own. Each one harmlessly impacted on their shields, but his attacks did seem to make them pause for thought. Or at least that's what Lusam thought to start with. But a second later, he felt the familiar silence spell grip him, and his voice no longer obeyed his commands. Although the spell didn't affect Lusam's magic, it was incredibly annoying and frustrating to not be able to speak at all. He gestured to Ren that he could no longer communicate verbally, and surprisingly enough, Ren seemed not only to understand what was wrong with him, but he also didn't seem surprised in the slightest. They all continued running through the thick forest with the Empire agents in close pursuit for over an hour, neither group gaining ground on the other. Several times magical missiles either impacted trees around them or sailed straight past them, only to impact trees further in front of them. Lusam wanted to tell them all to try and keep as many trees between themselves and their pursuers as possible, but it seemed they had all worked that out for themselves already, zigzagging through the trees as they went. It was about 30 minutes later when Lusam felt the spell fade that was keeping him silent.
I hate it when they do that, Lusam exclaimed.
Yeah, lad, I bet it gets annoying after a while, doesn't it? It's their standard first attack move. If they silence you, you can't strike back at them with magic. Our Magi have been trying to work out a countermeasure for over a century, but with no success, Ren said.
But it doesn't stop me from using my magic, it's just damned annoying, Lusam said.
Ren laughed loudly.
Yes, it is. It can be cured, but only 3 ways. Time, kill the mage who cast it, or enter a temple of Aisha. Either of those will cancel the spell's effects, but no magical defense or cure has ever been discovered, Ren said. As for it not affecting your magic, we know that, but they don't. Maybe we can use that to our advantage.
Maybe, replied Lusam.
A few miles later, they entered a steep tree-lined gorge. It looked like an ancient river or glacier had cut a giant V-shape into the land. There were rocks and boulders of all sizes littering the ground, but very little cover available. Once the Empire agents entered the valley behind them, they were going to have a clear, unrestricted view of them.
I need everyone to be in front of me, right now, Lusam shouted.
Everyone obeyed without question, but he felt he needed to explain his reasons for ordering them about anyway.
In a minute, when the Empire agents enter the valley behind us, they're going to have a clear shot at us. It takes much less effort for me to shield myself than it would all 4 of us. So please, stay directly in front of me, and whatever you do, keep running.
They were about halfway through the gorge when the first magical missile impacted on Lusam's shield. At first, he absorbed the impacts with ease, but as the number and frequency of them increased, he began to find it harder to maintain his shield. He knew he wouldn't make it to the other side of the gorge alive, and if he died, so would all the others. Desperately, he looked around for some cover, but there was none. The sides of the gorge were far too treacherous to attempt to climb. They were covered in scree and larger boulders, but he still desperately searched for any signs of cover high above them, even knowing they could never reach it in time, even if he found some. Lusam's mind and body felt numb with the relentless drain on his power reserves. Never before had he used so much power so fast, and he was finding every thought or movement a battle in itself. Then he saw it. High above him on the left side of the gorge was a huge overhang of rock. If he couldn't get himself and the others to any cover, then maybe he could bring the cover to them. He struggled on until he thought they were well past the overhang and any danger of falling rocks before putting his plan into action.
Stop!
He shouted, as another 3 missiles impacted on his shield and he staggered forward.
Lie down on your bellies for a minute. I think I have a plan.
They all followed his instruction, but not before another couple of missiles found their mark. He was the last one to lie down after he turned to face the oncoming enemy. They could clearly see them at the other end of the gorge. They had stopped at the entrance to concentrate their fire at them rather than attempting to do it on the run. Several more missiles came down the gorge towards them, but flew past above them harmlessly.
"What do you have in mind, lad?"
Ren asked from behind him.
"We need some cover, or I'm not going to make it to the other side of this gorge. I plan to try and bring down that large rock back there and block the gorge. If they can't see us, they can't shoot at us,"
Lusam replied. He sent out his mage sight to the rock face, searching for weak points and fissures within the rocks, but he just didn't have enough power left to reach out so far and maintain his shield at the same time.
"I can't do it. My shield is taking too much power for me to reach the rock face, and I can't drop my shield in case we're struck again,"
Lusam said. He heard movement coming from behind him and saw Ren appear at his side. Ren removed his shield and placed it directly in front of himself and Lusam.
"Now you can, lad," Ren said.
"Thanks,"
Lusam replied. He dropped his shield and concentrated once again on the rock face, this time reaching his goal. He found several large fissures within the rock face and began attempting to expand them. First, he created a force field within a fissure and then tried to expand it, but he didn't have enough power to split the rock any further. Then he noticed a small trickle of water running through one of the fissures, and it reminded him of something that had happened to him as a young boy. He had made a small clay pot with his grandmother one autumn day, and they had baked it hard in the oven. He had been very proud of his creation and insisted that it should be used for something other than simple decoration. He told his mother he would collect rainwater in the vessel overnight, but she had warned him about leaving the pot outside in the cold all night. He had ignored her warnings and woke to find the water within frozen and his pot completely destroyed as a result. He had been very upset and couldn't understand how water had destroyed his perfect pot, but his grandmother had told him,
"Water is the most powerful of all the elements, Lusam. It creates the great oceans and rivers, carves out lakes and canyons, and can even wash away mountains over time. Nothing can withstand the power of water, not even your pot."
With the wise words of his grandmother still fresh in his mind, he set about his task. This time, instead of trying to split the rock using his force field and the brute force of his magic, he instead blocked the exit of the water and let it build up within the fissure. Once the water had completely filled the void, he sealed the top of the fissure with his force field, creating a pocket of water within the fissure. Next, he quickly reduced the temperature within his force field and began to freeze the water inside. As the water froze, it quickly expanded within the fissure, creating a great force that pushed against both sides of the rock, until, finally, it split with a loud cracking sound. The rock face seemed to move in slow motion at first, falling away from its parent rocks on its long journey to the bottom of the gorge. It gathered speed quickly, collecting dozens of rocks and boulders with it as it came crashing down the steep sides of the gorge to the valley floor below. The results were far better than Lusam could have hoped for. Blocking the valley between themselves and the Empire agents were now hundreds of tons of rocks and boulders. He had no doubt they could clamber over or around the makeshift barricade, but at least they could no longer attack them directly, and it should give him enough time to get out of the gorge and find some cover.
"Well done, lad," Ren said, patting Lusam on his shoulder.
"We should get out of this gorge quickly and try to find some cover before they're able to climb over those rocks. I'm not sure how many more hits I can take, but I know it isn't many,"
Lusam said, wearily regaining his feet. It was at least another 10 minutes before they reached the far end of the gorge, but thankfully there was no sign of the Empire agents yet. What they saw beyond the gorge filled them with both hope and fear in equal measures. Below them was an immense valley floor, or at least they thought it was. They were unable to see anything through the thick, impenetrable mist that covered everything for as far as they could see.
"I don't like the look of that," Neela said. "Me neither, but I like the look of the men behind us even less,"
Alexia replied.
"It's going to be impossible for us to navigate down there," Neela said, looking worried. "We could travel in circles for days and never know it."
"Given the alternatives, I don't see we have any choice," said Ren.
"Agreed. And if we can't see anything down there, neither can they,"
Lusam said, glancing back over his shoulder at the first Empire agents to appear over the fallen rocks.
Besides, we just ran out of time to debate it,
Lusam said, as two missiles narrowly missed them, flying harmlessly out into the valley beyond. Chapter 30 They half ran, half slipped down the steep slope into the valley below. Thousands of small stones littered the slope, making the footing treacherous. Lusam was amazed that no one was injured when they finally reached the valley floor below and entered the incredibly dense mist that covered it.
We need to stay very close to each other from now on. If we lose anyone in this mist, we might never find them again, and we certainly can't start calling out to them, Lusam said.
I suggest we walk from here on in. The ground here is much more rocky, so try to stay on the rocks as much as possible. We'll switch directions as soon as we have an opportunity to do so on harder ground, Ren said.
They all agreed and headed off into the mist, stepping only on rocks where possible and staying close to one another. After a further 2 hours, they came across what looked like an ancient dried-up riverbed that led off in a different direction at almost 90 degrees. The ground within the riverbed was as hard as rock, showing no signs of their footsteps when they ventured onto it.
Wait here a minute. I'll be right back,
Alexia said.
Where are you going?
Lusam asked.
To buy us some more time, she replied, disappearing into the mist.
Alexia found the last evidence of their passing and began to leave fresh evidence in the form of footprints leading away from their true location. She terminated her tracks at a large outcrop of rocks, then returned to the riverbed in a wide arc, making sure not to leave any evidence of her true direction of travel. If her plan worked, the Empire agents would follow her tracks to the outcrop of rocks, then spend a long time searching for their tracks again, which of course they wouldn't find. Alexia found the riverbed easy enough, but she wasn't sure in which direction she would find the others. After a moment, she decided to head off to her right and was quickly rewarded by the sight of the others coming into view through the thick mist. She explained what she had done, and once again they set off together, this time following the ancient riverbed. As they walked, Lusam began to notice how strange the trees and foliage were in this valley. He was used to seeing all the different trees and plants in the forest where he grew up, but he recognized very few of them here. Then he also noticed something else very strange. The trees had moss growing on them all around their trunks, and not just on the north-facing side. The only explanation he could think of was that this valley was always covered in the thick mist, and that made him extremely anxious. If they couldn't see the sky to navigate by the sun or stars, and there were no signs to follow on the ground, how would they ever get out of this valley? He decided to keep the information to himself for now, as the most important thing right now was to escape their pursuers. Escaping the valley could come later. Darkness began descending on the valley, far faster than it would have done without the dense mist covering it. They had walked steadily all day within the dried-up riverbed and not seen or heard anything of their pursuers. Nobody spoke, but the atmosphere was one of quiet relief amongst the group. They had purposefully passed up the opportunity to leave the riverbed via rocky path several times during that day. Alexia had recommended doing this to confuse their pursuers even further. She had told them that if the Empire agents did manage to track them to the riverbed, they would expect them to leave it as soon as possible, and they would be forced to either check every possible exit point or split their forces to keep searching for them in the riverbed. Either way, it made sense to continue on as they were until later. Eventually, the land became much more rocky on both sides of the old riverbed, and they could have chosen to leave almost at any point along the bank without leaving any evidence of their passing, but they still continued until it was almost completely dark.
I think we should get out of this riverbed soon. It's highly unlikely they will try to track us at night, but they may very well be tempted to search this riverbed for us if they think we're still following it. They can't get lost in the riverbed, and they could always retrace their steps back to wherever they are right now, and then continue the search in the morning when it's light enough,
Alexia said.
I'd never have thought of that, but now you mention it, it seems obvious. I have to say I'm impressed with your tracking skills and knowledge of evasion. Where did you learn how to do it living in a city? Ren asked.
I didn't always live in Stelgad. I was once part of a brigand of thieves that lived in the forest south of Lemuria. We robbed wealthy merchants as they passed through our forest on their way to the southern cities. We needed tracking skills to survive inside the forest, but we needed the skills to evade capture even more. The Duke of Oakage placed a massive bounty on our heads. We had every bounty hunter in a Afaron after our hides, and even some from further afield. Many of us evaded capture for over a year, but the Duke somehow managed to get a spy into our band, and that didn't end well. Most of our band were slaughtered one night as they slept, attacked from all sides with no chance of escape and no mercy given. I returned a day later with another three of our members to find the devastation that was once our camp. I swore that day that I would make the Duke pay for what he did, but I doubt I'll ever get the chance to make good on that,
Alexia said, lost in the memories of her past.
I never knew that, Alexia,
Neela said, giving her friend a hug. Alexia brushed away the tears in her eyes and replied,
It's not something I like to remember too often. Besides, it seems so long ago now. I'm sorry I never asked you about your past when you came to Stelgad. I feel so bad now,
Neela said. Alexia smiled at Neela and replied,
There's no need to feel bad, Neela. You were the one who took me under your wing when I first arrived at the Crow's Guild with nothing. I remember you speaking up for me when they refused me entry into the guild, and old Reed challenged you over it. I remember watching you slice that guy up good while everyone around laughed at him getting beat by a young girl. But I also remember nobody else challenged you afterwards. I don't think that poor old guy even landed a strike on you, but you made him bleed good that day. I was impressed. Later, Byron told me you could have killed him 100 times during that fight, but you chose not to. At the time, I didn't understand why you let him live. Where I came from, if anyone challenged another, it was always a fight to the death. Later, I understood it was through loyalty to your fellow guild member, something that you taught me, Neela. That's why I chose to stay in Stelgad, and that's why I chose to become your friend, Neela, because I knew you would always be loyal to me, and I to you, something I had never experienced in my entire life before.
Lusam and Ren both felt awkward standing there watching the two girls hug each other, reminiscing over old times, but they needed to move before it got too dark to see. Ren cleared his throat, and it seemed to do the trick, both girls becoming aware once again of their surroundings and situation.
Sorry, guys, girl stuff, you wouldn't understand,
Neela said, and they both giggled at some unspoken joke before settling back down and falling in behind Lusam and Ren. Total darkness didn't come for another hour. Instead, it remained a colorless gray during that time, as if it couldn't decide whether it should go full dark or not. They didn't manage to find a particularly defensible position to make camp and had to make do with the shelter of a large rock. Lusam had suggested the location to make camp, because if they hid behind the rock, the Empire agents wouldn't be able to spot their auras unless they were right on top of them, as it was unlikely they would already be in front of them. Each person took their turns on night watch duty. But apart from Lusam, the others merely used their ears instead of exposing themselves to the mage sight of the Empire agents. The night passed without incident, something that Lusam was very grateful for, as it gave him a chance to recover some of his strength from the day before. He wasn't by any means fully recovered, but he felt a whole lot better than he had the previous day. Ren once again handed out some of his meager travel rations, and they were all soon underway again. Several times, they thought they heard movement through the thick mist and froze mid-stride, listening for any signs of their enemy, but heard nothing definitive, only to once again resume their trek. It was mid-afternoon when Ren, who was leading them, stopped dead in his tracks, quickly followed by the other three. What they saw before them stunned them all into a prolonged silence.
"Tell me that's not what I think it is,"
Neela said quietly.
"I think it is," Alexia replied. "But it can't be. We've been walking half a day. How can we possibly be back at the same dried-up river again?"
Lusam asked.
"I don't know, but unless we can find some way to navigate in this valley, I think we're destined to walk around in circles forever. Or at least we run out of food and water, which won't be very long,"
Ren said.
"Let's find some cover while we try to come up with an answer,"
Alexia suggested. They all knew that standing in full view at the edge of the riverbed probably wasn't the best idea, so they headed back the way they had just come, knowing they had just passed a bunch of large rocks they could take refuge behind while they tried to work out a plan of action.
"So, anyone got an idea how we can navigate through this crazy mist?"
Neela asked.
"I can normally navigate quite well, but without being able to at least see the sky or horizon, I'm completely at a loss in this environment. Sorry,"
Alexia replied.
"Me too. In a forest, even when you can't always see the sky, you can use the moss on the trees, but not here," Ren said.
Lusam had been thinking about this exact problem ever since they had first entered the valley, As soon as he'd realized that the trees didn't grow moss only on their north-facing side, he'd been worried about finding their way out of the valley again. He had thought of a possible way to navigate using his magic, but he wasn't sure it would work. And using his magic when they were so close to their enemies seemed foolish, to say the least. The idea he'd come up with would also, no doubt, require him to answer some tricky questions, ones that he wasn't completely sure he wanted to discuss openly for some reason.
"What about you, Lusam? Any ideas?"
Ren asked.
"Maybe," he replied cryptically.
"Well, do you or don't you?" asked Neela.
"It's not that simple, Neela. I would be using something we found in Helveel to navigate by, something I feel we should never reveal the existence of to anyone. I don't know why I feel this way, but I feel an overwhelming desire not to discuss it for some reason,"
Lusam said.
"Lusam, I already know about it. Ren is a paladin of Aisha, his word is his bond, and Alexia I trust without question. If she gives her word never to speak of it, you can rest assured she will keep it,"
Neela said. And Lusam thought about her words carefully. He knew Ren would never reveal the existence of the book if he gave his word, but he didn't know Alexia and could only trust Neela's faith in her. He remembered the last time he had questioned Neela's decision to help Lucy, and he knew instantly she was right then, and she was right now too.
"You're right, Neela. I have to do it. But I'll still have to ask Ren and Alexia for their word never to reveal my secret,"
Lusam said.
"I swear by Aisha never to reveal your secret, Lusam," Ren replied, hand on heart.
"I give you my word, Lusam, never to reveal what you say here today,"
Alexia said.
"Okay. This is going to sound very strange to you both, and I'm sure you'll have lots of questions. Please keep them to yourselves until later, until we're out of danger, and I promise I'll try to answer them then,"
Lusam said. Ren and Alexia agreed, and he continued to explain about the discovery of the stone door with the five-pointed star carved into it, the book on the pedestal, and how it had enhanced his power simply by reading it. When he finished his story, he was about to explain his plan of how he intended to use the book to navigate by, but he was cut short by Ren.
"It shall be blessed," Ren whispered. "Lusam, do you have any idea what you are claiming to have found, lad? You've just perfectly described one of the lost books of the Guardians. Nobody knows where any of them are hidden. Wars have been fought over their supposed location for countless centuries. It is written in the ancient scrolls that only a mage of incredible power can read such a book and survive, and only Guardians themselves may read them all. They were created this way to stop any one person from ever obtaining such power as the Guardians of old once wielded. Now I understand why Aisha favors you so much, and why the Empire have sent so many to end your life. Your power must already be far beyond that of any normal mage, and with the proper training at the High Temple, it will become far more potent still. Lusam, you have no idea how important you are, lad."
Ren looked shocked to his core and couldn't even take his eyes off Lusam for a long while. Alexia didn't really seem too interested in his story. She already knew he could use magic. The amount and how powerful he was compared to any other mage didn't seem to matter too much to her, which Lusam was thankful for right then.
"Neela, can I borrow one of your enchanted knives, please?"
Lusam asked. Neela removed one of her knives and handed it to Lusam.
"Enchanted?"
asked Alexia.
"It's a long story. I'll tell you another time,"
Neela replied. Lusam knew that the enchanted knife would amplify his divination spell when he attempted to locate the book. He had no idea how he knew that. He guessed it was part of the knowledge he had obtained from the book itself, but he couldn't know for certain. He formed an image of the book in his mind and sent that image towards the enchanted blade. The knife began to rock back and forth through 180 degrees, just like it had done when he searched for Neela, the range of movement gradually slowing until it stopped, dead still, pointing in the direction of the book and Helveel.
"Wow, neat trick. How did you do that?"
Alexia asked.
"Thanks. I used one magical object to find another. I did it once before to track where Neela was on the road to Stelgad,"
Lusam replied.
"But Neela isn't magical, is she?"
Alexia asked, looking strangely at her friend.
"No, she's not, but her knives are. I used one of her knives to find the others. This time I used it to find the book in Helveel,"
Lusam replied.
"Come, we better get moving. Every time I use my magic, the Empire agents may be able to sense it. We may well be using the book as a navigation tool, but they may be using me for the same thing.
They set off in the direction the knife pointed and rechecked their course every hour, each time correcting their course accordingly. Without the use of magic, they would certainly have remained lost within the valley. For the final 2 hours before full darkness, they travelled without the aid of magic, deciding being off course a little was far better than advertising the spot where they intended to rest.